Hello everyone and welcome to the first episode of Series 5. Obviously in Series 4, tried to do something a little bit different. Tried to do those bite-sized episodes, tackling mental health, but keeping it short. It was obviously just me as well, which can be both a good and bad thing, I'm sure. But we're returning to a more normal form of TNS in Series 5, where we have guests on and we have some fun chats and some poignant ones as well, as always. So got some really good guests lined up for this series. But for this first episode, I am joined by Maria Tapsinos, who is a very, very interesting human being, a wonderful human being. But in this chat, we talk about high-level sport, which is something that we've delved into in some of the earlier episodes, but we haven't gone back there for a while. And I'm fascinated in how do you balance playing high-level sports with your studies whilst at university? And Maria really goes into quite a lot of depth about how that happened, about the sacrifices that she had to make along the way. So Maria played to the highest level that you can in table tennis, which is a sport that I really do wish that I was better at than I am. Bit annoying, but yeah, Maria was such a great guest to have on first. Really, really enjoyable chat. And just before we get to the conversation part, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping. If you are enjoying TNS, if you've been a listener for a while, and you have an iPhone, of course, then if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a nice little review. It takes 2 minutes to do so. It helps us to grow in the charts and get our message out to as many people as possible, which is, of course, the aim of this podcast. So that would be great. And obviously remember to follow, subscribe, share whenever you can. And that does it for the housekeeping. Now, on to today's conversation. Hello, Maria, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, Luke. Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good. This is the first episode of the new series, back to sort of more normal TNS stuff, chatting to interesting people. So the first guest, you should be honoured.
Yeah, I don't think you could have had a better guest, to be honest,
lot of pressure now, lot of pressure. But yeah, look, today the chat is going to be about balancing sport and studies, especially at uni. It's something that we've sort of alluded to a little bit on this pod before, but never really delved into. And you are the perfect guest to do this. Obviously, the sport in question is table tennis. So when did you first get into table tennis? Was it at a young age or did it develop slightly later on?
So no one in my family plays table tennis, literally no one. It's all a little bit strange. I was playing loads of sports, football, tennis, everything at a younger age, quite sporty. And then basically it was just like one club at my primary school, which had a coach who was just running sessions on a Friday lunchtime. I literally went, I picked up a bat, played against my friends, and he was like, "You're quite good." And I was like, "Okay." And you know, when people are giving you compliments here and there, you're like, yeah, you're about 11. You don't know what's going on. And then he invited me to a Monday after school club. And then after that, he was like, "Look, I really think you have potential. Why don't you come over to the club in Reading?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay." Rocked up, had no idea what was going on. I met this nice guy called Brian Halliday. Unfortunately, he's passed now, but he was the coach that basically taught me to love table tennis and taught me everything I basically know about being headstrong and stuff like that within table tennis. He was with me for a good like 6-7 years there when I won my first national title. But yeah, it basically just like all spiraled out of control after attending the club. I was invited to more sessions and more sessions. And yeah, I just carried on playing and turns out I was okay. I was quite good. Won my first national title aged 13 in the under 14 category. Yeah, and I think from that was probably the big turning point. I've been playing for a few years, wasn't taking it fully seriously, but pretty seriously. And then I had to kind of drop other sports at that point. I had to kind of move and make a path. Like, what did I actually want to do? Probably a lot of athletes out there probably have the same decisions at that age. What do you do? Do you go to a tournament on the weekend, or do you play the Sunday football match? Like, you kind of have to make those decisions. And I was doing really well. Great encouragement by my family. I had friends in the sport and stuff like that. So it kind of just, went from there, and I've been playing ever since.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite a young age, I guess, to be achieving national success. You know, 13 is incredibly young, the start of your teenage years. So when was it when you had to make the call? You know, you just said you had to sort of drop these other sports you were playing. When did that happen? Was that at that moment or slightly later on?
So I would say it's when those conflicts arise. And I really like, I was playing tennis, I was county level tennis, I was playing Reading Academy development squad in the football, but it was just a little, it was just too much. Like a 12-year-old child can't really be affording to do everything. There comes a point, yeah, you can do them, you just play them once a week and you're not playing them that competitively and you just want to exercise and have fun. And I love sport for that as well because you meet so many people that way. But it kind of was, those clashes in sporting fixtures and stuff like that, that just kind of, I had to pick. And I guess when you've got a national title and you're still in the development squad of a football team and you're trying to push everything, that kind of helps clear your mind and make you decide what you want to do.
Yeah, I get. I mean, like, I can relate to that in some degree. Not, you know, to say I played anywhere near the same level that you did, but when I was younger, played sort of all sports a lot. You know, cricket, rugby, football, constantly. But then cricket started to become a number one sport. I was playing to a higher level, and I don't know if your coaches maybe said the same thing to you, but the worry was the injury side of it as well. Like, if you were playing, you know, for Reading and broke your leg or whatever it may be.
That would impact everything.
That would, yeah, it would ruin all the momentum that you had in that sport. And I guess that's when you start to, yeah, worry about being able to keep everything up, isn't it? And that's
No, no.
the real shame.
I fully agree with that. Still to this day, since I started taking table tennis seriously, I've not been allowed to go skiing. Partly on my dad's behalf, he won't let me go. It's such an injury-prone sport, and I love skiing. Used to go when, probably brief age 14. Ice skating as well, not allowed on that rink in case something happens. Just those kind of like sports where they're a little bit dangerous, a little bit accident prone, that I kind of avoid. I would say football as well. Yeah, I was quite cautious. I do remember maybe when I was like 15, 16, pushing into that like junior age category for England, just being a little bit like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Being a bit cautious. But I think now as I've gotten older, you get like more clarity on everything, and like your parents have less influence on what you're doing. So it's basically up to me what I think is gonna enhance or like detract from my performance and stuff like that.
And I guess, you know, that's a nice way to just shift this on with that sort of, we've got a little glimpse there of the sacrifice that you had to make when you were younger. But then, you know, when you went to uni, which is going to be the bulk of this conversation, balancing, you know, truly elite level sports with your studies at university is a difficult thing to do. And, you know, the sacrifice that you must have made, especially on that social side, I think at the start is a good, you know, good area to talk about. You know, how much are we talking? We're talking, you know, missing freshers week. Where, you know, was there a social life? I don't know.
So well, I think it starts a little bit before uni. You know, when you're 16, 17, 18, and those parties, everyone starts becoming a little bit, alcohol intoxicated, and tournaments again on the weekends, but that's when people are going out, that's when people are socializing. And when I was 16, 17, I was in the England squad, and I actually had my first senior call up just after I'd finished my A levels. So I would have been 17 at the time for a tournament when I would have been 18, but that was my first call up. And it's a lot of sacrifice, summer months playing. That was in India, my first senior call up. And then we go into uni, and my second call up, Russia, European Championship, senior European Championship team event. And that's the places you want to be. That's where you want to, but also you've got this huge like academic side to your life as well, and social side. And I'd just done my A levels, just got accepted to the University of Nottingham. And I was, a lot of the time you actually, I used to spend pre-corona, kind of sorting out when I could see friends, when I could see people. So I spent a lot of time waiting on them to tell me when Freshers Week would be and when the Europeans would be, because I knew they would might have like 1 or 2 days. I did not expect them to clash by the whole week. Completely missed my Freshers Week. Anyone out there want to tell me what a Freshers Week is like? I wouldn't know. but yeah, it was difficult, and it was something that I had to come to terms with. I had to, if I was going to pursue table tennis, I was ultimately, this was a huge opportunity, a huge breakthrough. Like, I was going to have to give up that Freshers Week and that element of university that everyone looks forward to. Everyone's going to be making friends. Everyone's going to be meeting each other. And I kind of had to give that up. And yeah, I've been giving up things before, but you know, that's a life moment, I reckon, like a milestone. People are like, yeah, my first year at uni. Which was unfortunate, but at the same time, I had a great time in Russia. I was smashing it. I was doing really well. I had some of my best results there when I was only just 18, really. So I kind of thought that my place in the team was kind of confirmed from that. Kind of showed a huge commitment to the England squad that I'd given up. Obviously, everyone knows university that first week, how important it is to people, even just like social development, making friends, that kind of stuff. So I think that was a big indicator in their eyes that I was fully committed at that point to be a senior member of the squad. But going forward, as university progressed, yeah, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of no, I can't come to that party. But also, I think it relies on the friends you make as well. I was very, very fortunate. After I missed that Freshers Week, I spent a little time, actually not nice time, because I was a little bit alone. I didn't have that many friends because I'd come in, I thought everyone had made friends, didn't realise that everyone was also as miserable as I was. Everyone was putting on this facade. But I actually spent a long time kind of sifting through people, trying to find people that I would think would be, I don't want to call them investments, sounds bad, but like, good friends. And that's what I was going for. I wanted good friends, solid friends, not people who didn't care about my table tennis, who didn't understand that. And again, that comes from a lot of the time, Nottingham is the hub for table tennis. I think every table tennis player would know that. Everyone who's gone to Nottingham would probably know that. So there was a lot of emphasis on, I already had a social life within the club. University sport is a huge thing. So I had a lot of friends there. But it's also, you need a bit of a break from your sport sometimes. So the friends that I made, yeah, they were really, really respectful of what I did, very encouraging. If I missed something, like, I never felt left out. It was those FaceTimes when they were at parties and I was away. Or if I needed to go to bed early, it was a quick, like, guys, like, I have to go to bed. I have to be up really early to do this. And they're very respectful, all the people I live with, very welcoming, very nice. And yeah, really, I was very fortunate. And I think a lot of athletes will find that in their friends. When you make real friends, those sacrifices don't seem as big because your friends don't make them feel as big. They're very accommodating to understand, and they want to know how you're doing. And I think as we get older, people just want to see people succeed and people want to do well. It's not a competition. I feel like sometimes when you're a bit younger, people are trying to oust each other to get into those places and to do things. But actually, at the end of the day, everyone's got talents where they've got talents, and you just want to see your friends thrive and do well. And yeah, I was really lucky in that sense.
I think that's really beautifully put. Yeah. And I think you're completely correct. As you get older, you know, as I get older, I get really excited when good things happen to my friends, you know, maybe more so than when it happens to me. And that's, yeah, and I think that's a maturity thing. I think when you're younger, I think especially with when I look back with sport, actually, you know, when you know, you've got such a competitive edge that when someone maybe plays really well, you're like, you're happy for them, but then you're also like, whoa, actually, you know, I'm quite jealous.
Yeah, 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 it's that little jealousy and your little like, but it just strives you to better. And
it does.
One thing that I would say is that my best friend in the sport, Tintin, who's number one in England, has been is an amazing, amazing player. I think without having her there testing me constantly, we were best friends off the court, but we played nearly all finals together. Every final was against each other. We were still doubles partners, but we still, at the end of the match, congratulated each other. It was very much like, if I didn't have that person pushing me all the time to be better and to do better, like, yeah, if she wins something, I'm a little bit jealous, but at the same time, just going to work harder and try and do better.
No, I like that. I think it's so important with your friendships. You do want to be pushed, really, don't you? Whatever sphere it's in, you know, I know we're talking more about sport here, but it could be in anything, to be honest with you. You want your friends to, obviously, you want to have a laugh with them, but you want them to push you. You want them to be honest with you. Because I think, you know, there's nothing worse than, I don't know, for example, you know, in this sphere, like journalism, if I'm like, to one of my mates, if I'm like, can you read this or blah, 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 the worst is when they're like, yeah, yeah, it's good, but it's like, but it but can't just be good. Yeah, exactly. Like, I want more than that. Yeah, exactly. And it's similar to what you're saying, where you want to be pushed, but it's healthy. You know, you want the other person to do well, but you also, yeah, you want to be there with them, you want to be competing. But just bringing it back as well to what you said before, I mean, for a start, you didn't miss anything with Freshers Week because it sucked. I can assure you of that. It is the worst week at uni. Oh my, you don't you're not yourself. You're sort of, everyone's so fake. You try and be friends with everyone, you end up being friends with no one. Horrible, horrible week. So you did well to get out of that one. But yeah, just that thing you said about like getting away from the sport, you know, how important was that at uni? Because obviously you must be playing every single day, intense, high levels. So having those friends to help you switch off from that must have been so key in, you know, as uni progressed.
So yeah, I think I struggled actually at the beginning to balance everything. I wanted, especially missing that freshers week and you're still in first year trying to make those friends. You make those sort of like sacrifices for your sport a little bit right at the beginning. And I kind of told myself that like, now is my time to try and forge these friendships. And it did play a factor. I actually got selected for after Europeans for the World Championships. My first senior World Championships. Amazing, amazing. I was over the moon. But actually, what I didn't realise is that I was putting myself basically in a position to get deselected. I wasn't taking it as seriously, and I wasn't, because I was prioritising the social aspect of my life, and there was nothing wrong with that. I didn't think that it was having such a detrimental impact at that point. And it is all about balance. And some people and a lot of athletes will have like three things. They'll have academics, social, sport. Some will only have two, academic sport. Some will only have academic social or sport social, sorry. So it's just like a huge balancing act. I still had a degree to do. I was still learning. Like I was going to these lectures, but it was a huge, I never lived with anyone who played table tennis, but I know people did and they were great. And that was the house that pre-drinks was always at. but it was coming home and not having someone to sit down and be like, well, how was your training? So, well, I don't want to talk about table tennis anymore. Like, talk to me about something else. And they would know when I would need to be asked about table tennis and if it was a conversation that was going to happen. It wasn't something that my life revolved around when I got home. And that was something that I really liked. It kind of set everything aside. And so did my academics, really. But academics was more, my brain was switched off from table tennis and then my brain was switched on to academics and it kind of worked like that.
Well, just before we come on to the academics, because I know when we spoke just before we came on, there's a lot of interesting stuff there. But, you know, did you have to sort of balance training with and turning up hungover, essentially? I mean, there must have been numerous occasions, I imagine, in first year, you know, when you first start going out and, you know, you have to socialize. Turning up must have been awful.
We definitely did have a chat before this. but yeah, that, as I was talking about the World Championships, I didn't realise how much my social life was implicating or like being such a negative impact on my table tennis. And yeah, there was a few times where it was late nights, waking up for those 9 a.m. sessions. And you had not had enough sleep, and everyone will know what I'm talking about when you go and the world is just a bit funny. Not completely funny. But it is. And can you imagine, I'm just thinking right now, to try and hit that white small ball back and forth on a table when you feel like that. And you personally, sometimes like you don't have a perception of what you look like to other people. But I knew that everyone there in that training hall knew that I had either been out or I was still a little bit intoxicated. And that, looking back, is so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. Because I thought I was so cool, you know, going out and doing those things. And it wasn't. But at the time, like, I don't regret anything because what's the point? But, like, I must have been a little bit hungover, a little bit drunk, actually, at some of them. And it showed, in my performances, and it showed kind of, I know I said I missed Freshers Week and that was an act of dedication, but just turning up not ready to put your 100% into a training session or a performance or anything shows the complete opposite. And I think that's what stuck out and actually got me to be deselected from the World Championships. One of the biggest heartbreaks and regrets, actually, probably, I know saying don't live with regrets, but one of the biggest things that I missed out on in my career so far. But yeah, it was just, there was nothing I could really do. I was in that world. I was in the university bubble. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so how do you respond to that, being deselected? How does that affect you? If it's such a big moment, clearly, did you sort of dwell on that for some time? Did it motivate you to say, hey, you know what, this is a learning point, and I'm going to sort of prove them wrong? Yeah, how did you react to that?
I think it took a while. I think there was a lot of hatred, a lot of anger, a lot of excuses, as athletes do. But also, just like one thing that I think is very crucial is that if you are balancing a lot of things, if you don't go in like to your academics 100%, then there's no point in doing it. If you're not doing your sport 100%, what's the point? And I think that kind of like clicked in my head, and I was kind of like, look, this is my time where I can do this. When I don't have training sessions, yeah, I can go and be social. But right now, if I want to take this seriously, and if this is something that I actually want to do and pursue and do well, I'm going to have to put my all into it. And yeah, it was a lot of hostility between me and the coaches, I would say, and they would probably say, in those months preceding the deselection, because I thought I was a real asset for the team, and I still do think I am a real asset for the team. But it was a turning point. It was a lot of conversations with friends, with parents, and that's when good friends and good parents, well, good parents, parents and good friends really come into it, and they're like, reality check. Like, is this something you want to do? We are not going to force you to do it anymore. You are old enough to make your own decisions. And I'm like, yes, this is something I want to do. It's like, okay, then you're going to have to dedicate a full amount of time when you are not like turning up hungover, drunk, whatever, or just like tired in a training session. That is your time where you can maximize your potential. And the other time, you can do whatever you want with it. And that's kind of how I saw it. And going forward from that, I don't think I ever turned up a little bit hungover or a little bit drunk. It was very much like, I won't go out, or if I do, I'll come home at like midnight. You know, nothing really happens past midnight. So I would have those like 8 hours, 8.5 hours sleeps, you know what I mean? And then I was up and I was ready, and it was drinking a little bit less, not going out as much, but kind of balancing it. And actually, I think towards the end of my first year is where I really got the hang of balancing everything and making sure that I was maximizing my potential in like all three aspects: social, sport, and academics.
Mm. Yeah, and I think sort of 2 points in that, really. So, you know, first off, I know I touched on this in the last series that we did, but sort of those low points, those difficult moments are really where change happens. Cause I think it's so easy to just coast, you know, and you'd be doing pretty well, but like, you're not pushing yourself. You're not bringing out the best of yourself. And those sort of low moments where something doesn't go your way. So in this case, you know, being deselected, it makes you stop and say, hey, this isn't working. Whatever this isn't working, something needs to happen. And clearly that was the case. So actually those difficult moments are the ones that are catalyst for change. And it's reframing that almost, that I'm sure you do now with hindsight. You're like, wow, okay, that actually really helped. Help me figure out where I want to go. And, you know, from what you've just been saying there, this is why I have such, I'm in awe of athletes, you know, just for that dedication. I don't think people really understand, and you have helped to illuminate this obviously so far, like just how much dedication we're talking. We're talking like on the daily, you're not having days off, you know, you're having to give it literally everything. And I know we spoke about the academic side a little bit before we came on here, but I think that's the part where I really realized how much it takes, because, you know, in your final year, you're saying you're traveling around the world. Yeah. And you're having to, you know, you have an enormous amount of work usually in your final year. You got your dissertations, blah, blah, blah. So you're doing all of that whilst traveling around the world and getting in the zone to play the highest level sport you can play. So talk to me about that. That must have been really, really challenging to do at times.
Yeah, so basically after that turning point, that low point, it was kind of like, what's the goal? And I think setting goals is always like an amazing thing to do, because you can kind of see where you want to be. And as you said, 2018 goalpost was where I wanted to be. I wanted to be on that plane. I wanted to be there. Unfortunately, I was there, and I attribute that to a lot of hard work, a lot of weeks missed at uni, going to travel to various tournaments and fully putting my dedication to it. And yeah, planes, trains, airport lounges, wherever you can imagine, that dissertation I wrote in my third year was written. And it was a huge, again, I keep saying balance, but it was a huge balancing act, and it took a lot of organization for me. I got selected in about December. It wasn't announced till about January, but I had a long time for my third year to get in contact with lecturers, to talk to people, make sure people knew my circumstances. And as we were speaking before about friends always wanting the best from you, actually, when you're doing something like that, everyone wants the best from you. You're going to represent the country. Your lecturer's not going to turn around and be like, well, hey, actually, that's got to be in then. You go and speak to them, you have a real conversation face to face, and you're like, look. And they're like, okay, like, we'll manage, we'll do something. What can I do for you to make it easier for you? And most of the time it was, can I have like an extra 2 weeks on the deadline, basically? So that when I was at the games or when I was at the pre-camp, the books are away. Because that's what I was there to do. I was there in that village just to play table tennis. I wasn't writing any dissertations. I wasn't reading any books to do with my court. I was just there to play table tennis. And that was my sole focus. But on a train, on a plane, to get to different places, my mind doesn't really have to think about table tennis at that point, and I can completely switch off and just go, okay, this is my time. I'm now going to write, or I'm going to read an extract or an article or something. But it was a lot of organization, a lot of talking to people, and a lot of making sure that everyone understood what I was going through so that I could maximize my potential and maximize my results in all areas. Because ultimately, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have great results in the Gold Coast, and we did. We had the first ever women's bronze medal, or first ever medal for the women's team, which was unbelievable. We were a very young team going out there. And I also managed to get a first at uni, which is just crazy. And I never expected that. Like, I never did. But I think it showed me that actually, I gave up about 3 months of that university lifestyle in my third year, that going out. But I still had those friends that I made. I still had like a place to call home when I went back to uni. There was no hostility from people. And I think we spoke about this, Luke. It was I think everyone has this, when your friend used to ask for an extension and used to be like, well, you don't really need one. Well, I spoke to my friends and I was like, look, do you think I'm being unreasonable? And everyone was like, no, you're going to Australia. Like, you're not being unreasonable asking for this stuff. And it's kind of like making sure that you're on the same page as everyone and everyone knows what you're going through. But it was a lot of reading articles all over the world, 12-hour flights. We did a pre-camp in Tokyo, a lot of stuff like on journeys. Wasn't the nicest stuff that I could have ever done, but it was where I was going to get the work done.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously that is incredibly impressive. You don't need me to tell you that, but I'm sure everyone listening will also, you know, be thinking, wow, you make it sound a lot easier than I'm sure it was. But it reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever seen, quite a lot of athletes have put out this image of like an iceberg. So you see the tip of the iceberg, which is often about a fifth, sort of 20% of how big the iceberg is. And the rest of it is submerged underwater. And so you see this thing on the edge, but all of it underneath, they say, is what you've just been saying, that hard work. You know, no one will have been seeing you sat on a plane reading that article that one time. But then it all adds up to allow you to you know, get a first and play at such a high level. And I think that's a really important thing to note. Yeah, it's that other side where people aren't watching you, which, yeah, you know, that's the important part.
The people closest to you are watching you. I would say that the people closest to you are watching what you're doing, and they are, you're coming home, as everyone knows, undergraduate degrees, you've got about 8 hours a week. Like, people have got time on their hands. They got things that nothing
too much
to do. But I was using every hour to either play table tennis or to do extra studying, or to those were my times to socialize. And so when I would come home from like a 10-hour day, people would be like, where have you been? And I'd be like, well, I was doing this and this. And then they kind of like, you can see them being like, oh wow, like that's a lot of hard work, that's a lot of determination, that's a, like, you really want this. And then they've got your back. And yeah, some people, the closest people, they see the bottom of the iceberg, but I do understand most people I talk to, they're like, yeah, great, you're so successful. And I'm like, well, yeah. There's a lot of other factors into it.
Yeah, of course. But I think the friendship thing is obviously so, so important. It's underrated, like having those people around you who are good. You know, you should really, I don't want to say picky with your friends, but you need to have a look at the people who are around you. Do they all support you? Do you support them? If you don't feel that full support from friends for, you know, the path that you're choosing, then you really need to have that internal dialogue as, you know, if they're not going to be there for me now, do I really need them in my life? Because they're not going to support me when I need it most. So the friend thing is so important. But do you think your self-motivation came from that deselection then? Do you think that was the driver for you to be like, hey, I'm doing this now?
It's difficult to say. There was a lot of things that happened in that deselection that made me think, do I want to take it seriously? Is this my potential? Have I reached the highest I can go, basically? And I think a lot of athletes kind of have those moments where they're like, can I push the boundaries a little bit more? Can I, or am I wasting my time? And a lot of like second guessing yourself, like, I just spent a whole day practicing, I don't feel any better. Like, I've not seen any improvement for 3 weeks. Like, and you're just, it's a perseverance game. And I was fortunate, I had a really nice coach, and I kind of really supportive parents, really supportive parents who basically like followed me everywhere. Not followed me, that sounds a bit stalkerish. They supported me in everything that I did and made sure, yeah, that I had everything I needed basically to succeed. But it was, yeah, it's difficult to attribute it just to that deselection, or whether it was something that I'd always had in mind, which it was something that I always wanted to go to a Commonwealth Games. I always wanted to play in that England shirt at that just extra higher level than what I was doing. But yeah, I think it played a factor. It definitely played a factor into my lifestyle, lifestyle at uni.
I know, I guess it is a little bit reductive for me to say, well, this was the one moment and it changed everything, of course. But I'm sure there were loads of different elements to that. But yeah, communication is the other thing that comes across so much here. It's about being honest with people, talking to people, you say with your coaches, with your uni. And it's great to hear that your uni supported you so much, because I hear so many different stories from people about different universities, which will remain nameless, about that level of support that they may get. I think it fluctuates quite a lot. So it's great to hear that they did support you wherever you needed it. Because I think if you take that away, you know, let's say the uni are like, no, you can't have an extension, which of course would be the most unreasonable thing in the world. But if they did do that, suddenly it becomes a lot harder to travel. It becomes a lot harder to play, doesn't it? So, you know, it's great that that happened. But just for this last little bit, I guess I want to talk about the impact of COVID. You know, yeah. I'm assuming you're not really being, you're not really playing, you're not really training that much. You know, when's it looking like you're going to get back?
So just to mention, after university, After I graduated, I spent 2 years playing full time in Italy. That was something I always wanted to do, try and play professionally and see how far I could get without any other distractions. Turns out distractions work better for me. Yeah, came back in the beginning of the pandemic, really was all my stuff was in Italy. I came back on an injury, actually.
So you were going to stick around out in Italy then? You know, the pandemic sort of cut short your time there completely, yeah.
Yeah, no, so I wasn't going to already decide that I was going to come home at the end of the season, but the season ends in like June, July. Mm-hmm. So I'd planned to stick around until then. But basically, I was actually playing a tournament in Portugal and I was severely injured. I don't know why I was playing. And I basically came back to get rehab, to get treatment, to sort it out. And then the pandemic literally went off and it was crazy. And obviously, as everyone can remember, the first lockdown, all we were seeing is images of Italy. So I clearly wasn't going back there anytime soon. No one knew how long this was going to be. Fortunately enough, in the summers, I managed to get there and retrieve most of my stuff. I still got a few bags out there. But yeah, it's been rough. It's been difficult. Helped by like the fact that I started this master's and been keeping busy with that. But it has been difficult. It's been trying to like exert energy in a different way. Because a lot of the time, yeah, it's a release of things to go and play table tennis, to get your mind off things. And if you spend every day in your house now, it's a lot of staring at walls and being a little bit bored. I'm quite an active person. So it's a lot of trying to find ways to stimulate myself. I mean, I'd love to be back on the table. And unfortunately, I as an elite athlete, we are actually exempt. We can actually go and practice, but the only place I can practice is in Nottingham. And it just seems unreasonable. Well, not unreasonable. Yeah. Stupid of me, for everyone's safety, everyone in Nottingham and everyone back home in my house, if I took a train up to Nottingham for a weekend and just like, it's just a bit dangerous at this time still. So I'm not doing that, but hopefully when everything and kind of calms down, I'll be able to go up there, spend a few weekends up there, see the England coaches that I haven't seen for so long, see some of my teammates who are up there training, doing their degrees now. But it's been difficult. I am signed on still to two foreign leagues. I still play in France in the second league and in Greece in the first league. But they're not going ahead at the moment. Only the first league in France is going ahead. So it's difficult. It's difficult not seeing those friends as well. I have a lot of my best friends are in table tennis as well. A lot of people I lived in Italy with, really close to now. And it's difficult not seeing them and not being able to like go to tournaments. But I think it's kind of given me a little bit of a perspective on things. I've had time actually to focus solely on studying at the moment, which is actually something I never thought I would have. But I'm very keen to keep going, see where it takes me and see what lies ahead. I know Birmingham 2022 is around the corner. Maybe that's something I might strive for. It just depends on circumstances, depends on my love for the sport still. It's still there, but I kind of need to work out exactly what I want to do. And again, set those goals like I did in my first year at uni, set those goals and set where I want to be in 5 years' time, perhaps. But it would be stupid of me to say now that I'm never going to play table tennis again just because I'm not playing this pandemic. I'd definitely be back on that table annoying a lot of people and trying to get the best out of myself soon. But yeah, it's been difficult mentally as well as physically.
Yeah, I think if you're an active person, it is really hard. Just sort of sitting around, you feel you get a bit lethargic, don't you? And it's hard to psych yourself up to go, I don't know, going for a run every day or whatever it may be. It becomes difficult. But look, fingers crossed. Obviously, there's announcements happening about when, you know, we're going to come out of this and sport can start again. So fingers crossed for you that it's not too long. But look, Maria, it's genuinely been such a pleasure to have you on. I mean, it's very wise, I feel. I've learned just a lot from listening to you speak about it, about sport in general, genuinely the top level. So just, yeah, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me today.
No, No worries. It's been great. It's been nice. It's not often I get to go through my whole history of my sporting life, and hopefully someone out there listening will be like, wow, I can actually balance all these things and I can actually go for their goals and their dreams. So yeah, it's been really nice. Thank you, Luke.
I really hope you enjoyed that conversation, the first episode of Series 5. I mean, Maria was a fantastic guest, wasn't she? She's got so much to talk about, and it's all really interesting stuff, and it was just great to be a part of that conversation. I feel like a lot of what she talks about is very relatable when you're growing up, you know. Okay, maybe not playing at sport for GB as such, but just the sacrifices you have to make with sport along the way. I remember when I was a kid, I used to play all the time, and as you get older, work gets a bit more intense, you have the social side of things as well, it becomes really hard to balance everything. So I always have that sort of pining for my youth when I used to be able to balance everything so well. But look, sport is such a great thing to do. And obviously when lockdown's over, I urge everyone to go play, join a team. And it's just a great thing to do. But I really hope you enjoyed that, as I say. And I'll be back very soon with a brand new episode.